Hi, everyone. As many of you know, that last week we lost one of the greatest legends of our sport, Jimmy Wofford. And over his time, Jimmy has accomplished so much, but just to name just a few, he has won 2 Olympic team silver medals, a Pan Am team gold medal, a world championship individual bronze medal, and a team bronze medal. He's also a 2-time winner of the Kentucky 5-star, and he's coached at least one rider on every Olympic, world championship, and Pan Am team since 1978. In 2003, he was inducted into the U.S. Eventing Hall of Fame, and he served on many equestrian committees. On top of that, he has written several training books. So this week, we're going to do something a little different. We're going to re-release the interview Rob and I did back from June of 2021, when Jimmy came on to promote his newest book, Still Horse Crazy After All These Years. Now, next week, we will continue with a brand new episode. But in the meantime, we hope you enjoy hearing Jimmy talk about his past and his thoughts on the modern sport of eventing. So without further ado, here is Jimmy Wofford.
Just because horses can do something, humans have to be careful not to ask them. You know, we have to make sure that we should ask them to do things. The eventing has almost been designed now for the super horse.
Welcome to the Major League Eventing Podcast, the show for eventing fans by eventing fans.
Mane and tail, Karen.
Love them.
Love mane and tail so much. The mane and tail folks are just wonderful, wonderful people mm-hmm. for the sport. They have the highest quality products, and they treat their people that work there so wonderful. We were able to get there and visit this place where they make the stuff. It was fantastic. Today, we're going to talk about the Mane and Tail Ultimate Gloss Shampoo and Conditioner.
Oh, yeah. So the Mane and Tail's Ultimate Gloss Shampoo and Conditioner is the first step to ensuring the highest shine for your horse's coat, mane and tail. It gently but deeply cleanses, leaving an unbelievably soft, silky coat with a premium reflective shine. Ultimate Gloss is wonderful to use on your dog's coat, too. Its formula is gentle enough to use on your adorable four-legged best friend. Ultimate Gloss softly lifts dirt and debris while leaving fur silky smooth, soft, and shiny for an unbeatable glossy finish. No need for a knight in shining armor to come to the rescue. You just need the boss of gloss, Mane and Tail Ultimate Gloss.
The boss of gloss. You know who uses the boss of gloss, Karen?
We use it on Stanley.
Stanley uses the boss of gloss, so keeps his white super white and shiny, and his black coat nice and got a nice little shine to it.
Yeah, and it keeps him, his fur is nice and soft too. It's after we
soft,
use it.
Very soft. So he's kind of got soft hair, and then he's got coarse hair, and the coarse hair, it softens it up, so it makes it nice. So mm-hmm. we get compliments on that all the time. So we love this stuff, Karen.
We love it.
We love this stuff. pH balanced. So mm-hmm. you can use it every day. It's not like it's going to do anything funky to your horse or anything.
Right,
like that,
and it moisturizes brittle, damaged mane and tails.
Yeah, so good stuff. Mm-hmm. We love this stuff. We love Mane and Tail. The people behind Mane and Tail are just as fabulous as the products.
Yes, they are.
So again, thank you so much, Mane and Tail. And we couldn't do this show without Mane and Tail, could we, Karen?
No, we can't.
Triple Crown Feed.
Oh,
Karen.
Yeah.
Triple Crown. Big fans of Triple Crown Feed. They have tons of great products out there. Mm-hmm. Premium stuff. Karen, what do you got to say over there?
So Triple Crown has formulas that are tailored to your horse's unique needs and help support immunity and gut health. Find your local Triple Crown Feed dealer by going to triplecrownfeed.com.
Triplecrownfeed.com. That's a little bit of a tongue twister.
It is.
Triplecrownfeed.com. They have a great feed locator. They have yes. a great feed comparison tool on their website. I encourage everyone to get over there. Check out Triple Crown Feed's website. Check out the different products. Check out what makes them so special. and give them a shot, right, Karen?
Oh, yeah.
Support the people to support the show.
I recently treated myself to a pair of the Fairfax and Favor Boudica ankle boots. And they come in several different colors, but I got the black leather. And they have a shearling lining, so they keep your feet nice and warm during these cold winter months. Now, I've read all over social media about how comfortable these boots are, so I decided to test them out. The first time I wore them, I took our little Stanley for a very long walk. And it was several hours later when I realized I never took these boots off. That is how comfortable they are. And I've been wearing them pretty much every single day. And I wear them to work and I wear them around the house. So to get yourself a pair, check them out by going to fairfaxandfavor.com. Cooler weather is just around the corner, so don't let your horse get caught in the cold.
Yeah, a turtleneck has your horse's clothing needs covered, Karen.
They sure do.
Don't let your horse get caught out in the cold on that first cold night of the season. Now is the time to shop and purchase your fall and winter blankets, Karen. So how do people learn more?
So for sizing and temperature guidelines, you can go to turtleneck.biz.
Trish Scott's got us covered, and she can cover you. Trish is on with us to talk about equine mortality and medical coverages, which there's a lot of changes, Trish. So tell us what's going on in the industry right now, and how can you help people?
Yeah, there's a lot of changes going on in the equine mortality medical coverage right now, and I just wanted to put the word out there that we don't have to be afraid. Changes are coming, but I can certainly take care of, you know, whatever questions, concerns, you know, our vendors have. Right now, the biggest one is Great American is not offering any medical coverage to any renewals or new business. And the thing is with our ventures, they're one of the top three rated horses for mortality. So it's a very unique breed of animal, very unique training. So we need to make sure that your policy is covered. I have access to some of the top rated carriers right now. They are all offering full mortality, medical, surgical, any coverage is needed for our ventures. Don't worry about it. Just give me a call. I'd be more than happy to walk through your current policy and make sure that your renewal is covering your horse. Not a problem. Just give me a call. I'm always available. 484-319-8923.
I'm Rob.
And I'm Karen. And Rob's super excited about today's guest.
Very, very excited, Karen. We got a legend.
Legend. Yeah. So not only is he a legend in our sport, but also an author and with a newly released autobiography. Welcome to the show, Jimmy Walford.
Jimmy, welcome to the show.
Thank you, guys. Good evening.
Oh, man. I'm so excited.
I know. A little nervous.
I'm a little nervous. We haven't show prepped like this, I don't think, ever. So we're definitely huge fans.
Yeah.
We actually just had a good friend of ours, Steve Berkowitz, just the other day. He's a veterinarian. He's always at Fairhill Horse Trials, and he's the guy cooking on the hill. And he was like, "You guys have to get Jimmy Walford on just last weekend."
Yeah, just last. Yeah.
So he's going to be a happy camper when we say, "Hey, we got Jimmy on, and he's coming on this week."
That's
so
good. Steve does the best photography around.
Yes, yeah, he does.
A great job.
Several of those photographs,
yeah.
He usually sneaks up and catches me when I'm not looking.
Yeah, he's good for that. If anybody likes foxes, he definitely catches a lot of fox photos.
Yeah.
And he's fantastic, fantastic guy. So you wrote, the new book is called Still Horse Crazy After All These Years. So this is an autobiography as opposed to your other books, which have all been like training books, right?
I've got one other book of a collection of stories and articles that I wrote called Take a Good Look Around. And that's about my adventures, fly fishing and shooting. And then it was space age technology 21 years ago, I did a blog from the Sydney Olympics.
Oh, wow.
And so I blogged for US Eventing and Practical Horsemen and several various groups over the next 10 years or so. And that formed the basis for that book. Take a Good Look Around was the title. And that title comes from a neighbor who used to misbehave at parties. And yes, alcohol was involved. And his wife would grab me by the ear and pull him out of there and say, "Take a good look around, big boy, because you won't be invited back." that was my attitude toward the places I was going, the things I was doing. Was there was I have there's no certainty that you'll be back, you know, to experience that whatever it was again. So you want to take a good look around as you're going through it.
You know,
the latest book, Still Horse Crazy All These Years. I came up with that title because that's what it is. You know, 76 years later, I'm still horse crazy, and wrote a book about it. What drove this was Trafalgar Press came to me several years ago and basically said, "Why do you ride?" And my immediate answer was a smart aleck answer. You know, I ride because I don't know how to stop. But I also realized that I had an unusual childhood, and I have been the Forrest Gump of the horse world ever since. And during that time, I was raised without a father, and that has a powerful effect on a child, especially a male child losing his father image. And I wrote this. I have four grandsons, and I wrote this so they would come to know me a little better than I knew my father, who died when I was 10. So he just is kind of an idol. He's a perfect model, that's not realistic, but that's the way it works in the human mind. Yeah. So this is dedicated to my father, but it's also dedicated to my grandchildren.
Wow. That is awesome.
Yeah, that is awesome.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So speaking of your father, I mean, we did a little research. I mean, he was a colonel, but he also represented the U.S. in the 1932 Olympics for show jumping. And then he went on to coach the U.S. eventing and show jumping teams in 52 at Helsinki?
Yes, the Olympics in Helsinki. He must have been an unusual horseman because he coached both the show jumping and the eventing team. Both teams got bronze medals. And the eventing team especially is interesting because the average age of the horses was 7.
Wow.
It was a 3-rider team in those days. We've gone back to that 60 or 70 years later. There are only 3 riders, 3 horses. Average age was 7. The average age of the riders was 19.
Wow. Average.
Yeah, 19. No, average age was 20. They were 19, 20, and 21 at the time. And I would have liked to have talked to my father about trying to coach basically teenage boys.
Yeah.
And keep them in line and teach them how to ride because their skills had to be rudimentary. Yeah. And in those days, eventing did not have the polish and the technical expertise that these riders have these days. These riders are in a different world now. They're so good. But he had to prepare them. And they took all 3 teams, and this was very modern at the time. In the summer of 1952, they took all 3 teams, dressage, show jumping, and eventing, and they competed in Europe that summer. The eventers went and rode in the lower show jumping classes to practice, and the dressage people had dressage shows that they went to. We're still seeing that these days, you know, as we send teams and riders abroad trying to get more experience and more mileage on them. So that, you know, that would have been something I'd really be interested in talking to him about.
Yeah.
Karen, you're right. He rode in 1932 at the Olympics, and I made a major league effort at going back to the Olympics in 1984 and almost made it. And that was kind of the end of my career. And I talk about that a lot in the book. You know, I talk about a lot of my equestrian team experiences in the book.
Well, you've been, I mean, so you have an Olympic team, Pan Am team, WEG team, medals and everything. And you won Kentucky twice. I mean, that's what a career. Holy smokes. I mean, that's just, does any one of those, and real quick question, the Olympics, you were on, you were named the 3 teams, but the one year you boycotted the Olympics, is that correct?
I didn't boycott it.
The U.S.
That was not the choice of the athletes. But yes, I was named to the 1980 Olympic team. And then we eventually went to the alternate Olympics in Fontainebleau, France, in the summer of 1980. And I was the individual silver medal there. And I'm quite proud of that. Because all of the eventing nations joined the boycott.
Okay.
So, you know, Colonel Weldon, the late director of the badminton horse trials, said, it's not what you win, it's who you beat to win it. And there were some awfully good riders there at Fontainebleau in 1980 with good horses. And I was able to come out in second place. And I was really proud of that. And I described that in my book, because I had a hair racing experience, because Karawitch basically ran away with me on cross country.
Oh, wow.
And at first I was a little bit panicked, but I realized as we went around that he sensed the occasion. I'd been riding him for 3 years by that time. I knew him pretty well. And he knew this was a big deal. And it was very difficult to make the time. And he had the fastest round of the day. Wow. But that wasn't the plan, because I went out. I was, I think, the second team rider to go. And in those days, you know, the first rider was just supposed to get around, and the second rider was supposed to trial the fast routes. And then you kind of saved yourself. And then the team captain was supposed to go out there and lay down a, you know, a fast and clean trip. And that was how you built a team score in the old classic format. And Karawitch didn't want to hear about that. So I wound up kind of getting an individual medal that I had not really planned for or intended on Thursday afternoon when Jack LaGoff and I were making plans. I had to kind of let my plans go because my horse had taken over, which is a neat, looking back, it's a neat experience. And it tells you a little bit about the horses that we ride.
Wow. That's amazing. That's awesome. You mentioned Jack LaGoff. So obviously you've seen, you know, you mentioned that your father passed away early and he was a team coach, but somewhere along the line, you know, you've seen the Jack LaGoff era begin, and then kind of that whole, you lived that entire Jack LaGoff USCT.
Yes, completely. I mean, my career was before Jack and continued after Jack. Yes.
Wow. And is that covered in the book pretty in detail as well?
Oh, yes. I talk about that a lot. I think I mentioned in there, I forget the number of that now, but I counted up. I think I've had 10 or 11 U.S. equestrian team eventing coaches during my time, you know, beginning with my father and then Stefan Vichy and Lars Setterholm and a lot of names that people really don't. When you say eventing coach, people think of Jack LaGoff and Mark Phillips. Yeah. We've had an awful lot of very good people work for the team over the past 50 years or so.
Yeah,
and I'll talk about some of them in there.
Yeah, it's so tough with this book. You know, we can only talk so much about it. There's such a huge amount of history. And
we want people to go out and get it.
Yeah, we want people to go out and get the book. So we don't want to let everything
out. Oh, yes. It's Trafalgar Press, Horse and Riders. books.com.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll definitely say that again.
Modernbooks.com.
Yeah, and we'll put that in the show notes too. As far as the, like, your opinion, just if we can get your opinion on a couple things too. Like the USCT and the rider residency program and all that, how that kind of was and how things have changed today as far as the team riders go. Do you think do you have an opinion on that? Like, do you think that you liked it better that way or the way it is today, or?
Well, you know, obviously, I'm the perfect conservative. I like things just the way they used to be. But that model, the Gladstone, the permanent training center, the riders and residence program, that model would not work in 2021. You know, these riders, all they support themselves by running their own programs. And they're good at it and they're successful and they're large programs. They affect a lot of riders. And it's a part of the reason that riding expertise has improved so much, you know, over the past 20 years. But these team riders now, they could not afford to give up everything else and move to Gladstone, New Jersey, and just live there all of the time and ride 6 days a week and take lessons you know, all day long, every day, because that's what Gladstone was. I mean, you live there at Gladstone, or you lived in the neighborhood, and you showed up at 8 o'clock in the morning. You rode really until 2 or 3 in the afternoon.
Wow.
And Jack McGough was there, and Burton Nimeth was there for the show jumpers. I mean, it was a very, very tight, intensive program.
Wow.
And as I say, it would not work these days, because the riders, they can't do that for one reason or another.
Right.
Yeah. Man, that's amazing.
It is.
I love, I can't wait to read the book. The book is coming. But we haven't gotten a chance to read it, so we're, oh my gosh, I can't.
Don't forget what good Christmas presents they make.
Yeah, for right? sure.
Yeah.
And then you're still going around, and you're still doing tons of coaching and clinics and everything still today, right?
Yes. I don't teach at my facility anymore. I thought that 40 years standing in the same arena was probably about enough. So I kind of, I do guest appearances at local facilities during the week. And then I fly to do clinics probably 2 weekends a month.
Wow.
My goodness.
Karen has actually ridden in one of your clinics.
Yeah, I've ridden in one of your clinics.
Many years ago.
Yeah, many years ago.
Yeah, you poor baby.
No, it was all good.
Did I make you cry?
No.
I didn't make you cry.
No, you made me laugh. Because I had a off-track thoroughbred. He was 15-2 hands, and you said that he looked like Mr. Big, a 17-hand thoroughbred that was standing out in the rain and shrunk.
Left out in the rain and shrunk. Yeah. Yes. I probably called him a pocket rocket, too, at one point.
I think so, yeah. He was, but it was great. It was a great clinic.
She talked about that clinic for 2 weeks straight. So she loved every minute of it. So. Yeah. Do you ever, when you get clinics, do you get like starstruck people that have trouble like just riding in front of you?
Oh, I have first lessonitis, but I usually get them past that pretty quickly, give them something else to think about, and so on. I think people over, it's gratifying, it's interesting, but people overthink the process.
Yeah.
You know, and I tell the instructor seminars that I work with, you know, they hear half of what you say, they understand half of what you say, and they can apply half of what they've heard, and they can succeed with half of what they try to apply. So the margin for improvement actually is pretty small in there.
Yeah,
it's very rare that you transform someone. You can affect their thinking. Certainly, there are some situations, and I hope Karen didn't see them, but there are some situations, especially cross country, where safety starts to become a factor. You know, and you have to step in and regulate the way the horse and rider do things, because you realize that it's potentially unsafe, you know, for them to persevere just chucking the reins at something and running at a jump. That's not really a prescription for success.
But I
don't know. I don't think of myself that day. You know, I'm still down in the scuffle, and I don't get my message across with every horse and every rider every day. It just, horses don't work like that. And it keeps you humble, you know, because you'd like to have all the answers. You'd like to have good answers. And I think if you're, you know, if you're having a 50-50 day with horses, you're probably actually having a pretty good day.
Yeah. I mean, it's a short little snippet. You have a small period of time to understand the rider, the horse, and still affect your what you're hoping to get change out of.
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And do you find that your coaching, like what you have to coach, has changed over the years as the sports evolved? Like has that changed, or has riding kind of been just a constant? Good riding and good horsemanship never changes.
Good riding, good horsemanship is that is classical, and that remains and continues. You know, the emphasis, especially since 2004, when they changed the format, the balance of the skills that was required, your so-called skill set, has changed now. with a greater emphasis on the technical side. In the classic format, it was a construct. It was an analytical tool. It wasn't really anything you could apply. But the scoring was supposed to be 3 parts dressage, 12 parts cross country, and 2 parts show jumping, 3 to 12 to 2. And there's no way to measure that. But the intent of the scoring system was to make the cross country very, very, very important in relation to the other two skills. And now, of course, the scoring ratio is 1 to 1 to 1. And so that, of course, has magnified the importance of the dressage and the show jumping, but especially the dressage, because as Jack LaGoff pointed out long ago, you can only go so clean and fast cross country. You can only jump clean in the show jumping and not have any time falls, but you can always improve your dressage. And we're seeing that now. I mean, the number of riders at the Kentucky event back in April that were under 30, well, that's level sevens, right? You're getting all sevens and 1 or 2 8s if you break 30. Yeah, that's
incredible.
That's really something. Yeah. When our horses, we were lucky if we could keep them in the arena. my instructions from my first Olympic coach, Joe Lynch, with Kilkenny, said, now Wofford, said, when you come out of the corner and you ask for medium canter down the long side, you soften the reins and you swing your back and you close your legs and you take one stride with Kilkenny and you start half halting down to the corner. Because the minute you open the door on a classic horse, he was gone. You know, you didn't have to kick that horse. You just softened your reins and you're off to the races. And you had to smooth it out, because even as you were taking back, he was still going forward. And you had to kind of time the transition back down. But the timing of the aid started as soon as you asked the horse to go forward.
Incredible.
That's different now. These horses are really well trained and much more biddable than horses were in my era.
Gotcha. Wow. Well, that actually leads into some of your questions that you've got in the quick fire questions.
Yeah. So we have a little fun segment called quick fire questions. And
and we have to bleep out stuff.
But this
for a fee, we can bleep anything.
And this
remind me to take you with me to my next clinic.
And quick fire questions is brought to you by Red and Goat Equestrian. Get your all-weather outerwear by going to redandgoatequestrian.com. So it's just 5 questions. But we do grade you at the end.
Oh, I'm very, you know? I am not grading. You can grade Jamie Wofford. I'm not grading Jamie.
All right. So we'll start with an easy one. I think it's easy. Favorite event that you ever competed at?
Favorite event I ever competed at, Fontainebleau, 1980.
See?
That was the alternate Olympics.
How about that?
There very we go. Cool.
That I spoke about a little briefly a few minutes ago.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know the answer to this, but I don't know if our listeners do. Any hobbies outside of horses?
Fly fishing and duck hunting.
Ooh.
There you go.
Depending on the weather.
Man. You ever teach people that stuff? I don't think I have the patience to fly fish. I'm very uncoordinated. I would be terrible at it.
Well, it's a Zen exercise, because you cannot fly fish and think about something else.
Is that right? How about that?
Yes, you have to stay in the moment.
Gotcha.
And especially fly fishing for trout, they don't live in ugly places. you're surrounded by really very pretty scenery, and of course the weather is whatever the weather, but fish don't care if it's raining because they're already wet. So, you know, it's a great practice in the summer. And then in the winter, part of the fun for me of duck hunting is I take my Labrador with me. And you can't see him right now. He's asleep right behind the chair.
I've seen him at the shows before.
Yeah, we see him at the shows. Sure. Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely.
That's when my students are looking for me on cross country. They know not to look for me. They look for a black dog lying down someplace and then hiding behind a tree with binoculars.
Okay, so next question. This is where it gets a little tougher. One thing about the sport of eventing you were glad to see change.
I think the endurance aspect of the classic event in many cases was overdone. And that there are a lot of ugly scenes that took place. And unfortunately, some of them are still exist in the historical record. And that was a failure all the way around. It was a failure on the part of the course designer asking too much too long. It was a failure on the part of the grand. It was a failure of the coaches not to instruct the rider sternly enough to, as Le Goff would say, you have to listen to the engine. And I think the riders got overly competitive. And I'm thinking specifically of 1968, 1970, again, 1978. You know, these were not attractive. They were not attractive experiences for horse and rider or for spectators. Because there are a lot of tired horses. I think that's a short answer, yeah. Karen, is there are a lot of tired horses, and conditioning to that level for what we were doing is a real art. It's not scientific anymore. And that a lot of the U.S. team's success during that time was based on Jack LaGoff's ability to condition horses for a 22-mile classic event.
22 miles. That's incredible. Nice. Yeah. You broke up a little bit when you talked about the course design aspect of that. Could you say that part again?
Well, the courses, the cross-country course in the classic format at the Olympic and World Championship level was over 5 miles. The steeplechase was 2.5 to 2.75. And I smiled. They announced the official time was 11 minutes and a few seconds at Kentucky this spring. And I heard one of the riders talking about, oh, I've got to be careful because my horse gets tired at 8 minutes. And I thought to myself, you know, I was walking through the infield at Kentucky at the time, and that's where the steeplechase course was for the World Championships in 1978. And the time on that course to avoid penalties was 5 minutes at 690 meters a minute. And that was the warm-up. Then you went off and you did roads and tracks for an additional anywhere from 50 to 65 minutes. And then you did a 5 mile cross country course. So you can see why I said earlier, Karen, that the one thing we saw an awful lot of tired horses. Yeah. And I'm sad about that. You know, that I think humans should have been a little more aware that we were working too close to the limits of horses' capabilities. Mm-hmm. I do think to continue that thought for a second, the danger now is that they're asking more and more training of the horses. For example, there were the International Events Committee floated a concept that we were going to start asking for flying changes of lead every third stride on the diagonal. Well, that it takes about another 6 months to a year of training to get a horse stable in a single flying change and now make him stable in doing threesies, which increases the intensity with which riders have to train. Again, there was a trend for a while. We need to make the show jumping bigger and wider because we were getting too many clear rounds. And my answer was just because horses can do something, humans have to be careful not to ask them. You know, we have to make sure that we should ask them to do things. The eventing has almost been designed now for the super horse. It's not just for the well-trained horse. It's for the super horse. The dressage test is no longer just a test of training. It's also a test of confirmation, because how they move has such an influence on the judging, and I get that. But historically, the dressage was to demonstrate the training of the horse. But now, of course, you need a horse with three paces, and two of those paces have to be an 8 or a 9. you know, and one of them is seven, or you might as well not even show up. Wow. I mean, of course, you show up, you know, you do this for the thrill, you do it for the challenge and so forth and so on, but you also do it for the competition. Well, it's tough to go into a competition knowing you're not going to win. You don't really have a chance. If you're going to get a 35 or a 40 in dressage, and the leader after the first day has a 19, these days you can't make that up. Right. And so I think in designing our scoring system and designing the specs for the three phases, we have to keep that in mind. But of course, horses can jump higher and wider. And of course, they can do a much higher level of dressage tests than we do. But we have to take into account the cumulative effect on the horse's system of what we're doing. I mean, it's interesting. We had a horse at Kentucky this spring who was 19. And it's not at all unusual to see horses in their middle teens competing successfully. And that speaks to better training, work on better footing, obviously better veterinary practices, advances in diagnostic medicine, and so on. But we just have to, you know, we have to care for the horse.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah, excellent answer.
I love it.
So when you, when you're looking at a horse to buy or to ride, what is one thing that you look at that tells you that this horse is going to be a superstar?
Well, I was going to ask a follow-up question is who am I looking at this horse for?
Your question. She's looking at me.
For yourself. I mean, for yourself.
A star. Well, for myself, I'm going to probably buy something that's half Percheron and half quarter horse. And, you know, he's going to be willing to stand still all day because I'm not in a big hurry to go anywhere or do anything in the saddle at my age. But if I'm looking at a horse for a young star who's quite a good rider, then you're looking for the super horse. You know, he has to move like a 10, he has to jump like a gazelle, and he has to have a natural galloping stride. Yeah. Wow. You know.
Is the thoroughbred horse, you think, still have enough? Do you think the thoroughbred horse can still do it?
Obviously they can, Rob, sure. The last survey I saw of the breeding of successful event horses and the statisticians' measurement of success was top 10 placing at a what is now a 5-star. So, you know, what's the breeding of that horse in general? And the breeding of that horse in general was at that time 72% thoroughbred.
Gotcha.
Now, there was a German lady brought her horse over to Kentucky this spring, mm-hmm. and the horse had a brand. And it was a lovely type, fabulous, you know, gorgeous horse. And it's, someone told me it's 15/16 thoroughbred.
Wow.
So it had a German sport horse brand, but it's as close to thoroughbred as you could get.
Wow.
How about that?
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting. Well, and the whole warm blood bloodlines, I mean, there is a lot of thoroughbred, you know, the more you start looking.
If you really look at them.
I'm just kind of curious about that, you know, picking your brain about that. So mm-hmm. I didn't mean
yeah, no, no, no. That's okay. All right. So last question. If you could ride any horse, past, present, or fiction, who would it be?
It would be Carowage.
Really? Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And I talk about why that is in my book. How right.
Yeah.
What a great horse.
Yeah. Yeah, I was asked, I'm doing some book interviews and someone asked me, you know, looking back over your life, what as a rider, what were your happiest years? And it was the 4 years I was riding Carowage.
Wow, that is awesome.
Because I had a wonderful connection with my first Olympic horse, Kilkenny, but he was a young man's ride. I mean, he was like strapping a rocket, pointing. And you didn't worry about the dressage, and you knew he could jump. He had jumped 6'6" as a 6-year-old with another rider just because they tried him as a show jumper. And, you know, he was Irish and he had no desire to do anything. It just attacked the next jump. And Carowage was a different ride. He was a very cerebral ride. He thought about what he was doing. He thought he could think at a high rate of speed, obviously, because he had some fast rounds in several serious competitions, especially at Fontainebleau in 1980.
Wow.
I had a mental connection with him that was unusual.
Gotcha.
And I talk about that in that wonderful new book that's just out at your local stores.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, and do you think he would, how do you think he would fare today at the upper level?
He would be successful, but he would not win Kentucky because of the dressage.
Gotcha.
Right. Gotcha. Yeah, because he was a good mover, but he could not move in the same ring, say, with R.F. Scandalous.
Who
led the dressage at Kentucky this year.
Not many can.
There are not many people that can stay in the ring with that mare.
Right.
But you take my point.
Wow.
Karen? Well,
definitely A++.
Probably the best quickfire questions and answers we've ever had. Beautiful job.
So, Jimmy, as we wind things down, do you have any advice for an up-and-coming rider or adult amateur that want to make it in this sport?
Oh, sure. Ride. Ride everything, you know, ride every type of discipline, show saddle horses, gallop race horses, learn about the horse, learn how they do it, learn how different people train horses to do different things, learn how different breeds of horses suit certain disciplines and so forth, so that horses are second nature to that rider after a while. And they don't have to think about the horse so much because they instinctively, intuitively know what's going on. And because they've had such a wide range of experience, this model rider that you're talking about, asking about, they've had such a wide range of experience that they're not surprised by training problems that come up along the way. And what to other people is new experiences is to a rider like that, it's a repeat experience, and they've either learned the answer to the problem themselves, or they've been taught it by others through watching. And many of the best things that I learned about eventing, I learned either as a steeplechase rider or working in the show ring. And those skills are directly applicable to eventing, and many of eventing skills are directly applicable to the other two Olympic disciplines, certainly.
Yeah.
Man, oh man.
Great advice.
Well, we are so excited for this book. So the book is called Still Horse Crazy Still Horse Crazy After All These Years. I apologize. And it's Trafalgar Square is the publisher. That's horseandriderbooks.com. And on there, what's really nice is they have a little video. So you can see like a little kind of video to kind of get you kind of excited about the book. And then you can even read like a chapter of the book.
Yeah.
And so you can get a little preview.
They've got several excerpts available. Don't forget the subtitle.
Oh, the subtitle is very interesting. So it's I mean just make sure I get, if it didn't happen this way, it should have. What's the genesis of that subtitle?
It's an expression of mine, especially after I've had a couple of cocktails and I'm not testifying under oath, shall we say, and then someone expresses disbelief and I say, well, if it didn't happen that way, it should have.
That's fantastic.
You'll have to read the book to figure out what parts are applicable and what parts are not.
That's really funny. So we're super excited. The book is available now. Everyone, please get out there and get it. Ours is on the way.
Yeah.
So we can't wait to read it. Obviously, we could interview you for 3 hours, but obviously there's no time for that. And people just need to read the book because this is gonna say it all. So Karen, was this fantastic?
This was great. This was wonderful.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for giving me the chance to promote my new book.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed today's show. To learn more about Major League Eventing, go to MajorLeagueEventing.com and join our mailing list to get all the Major League Eventing updates. Cheers!